Hi, thanks for listening to one of our Sunday talks from the Center for Spiritual Living in Midtown Atlanta. If this is your first time listening to one of our talks, we certainly hope you enjoy it. But if you're a regular listener to our podcast, we would like you to consider contributing to our center. It's easy to do. All you have to do is go on our website, and it's easy to find the button and make a contribution. That will allow us to continue bringing these talks to you on a regular basis in the future. Once again, thanks for listening. As Doug said, this morning I want to talk about the power of mental and spiritual healing. And when I'm talking about healing here today, it varies from week to week. I'm not talking about emotional healing. I'm not talking about psychological healing. We're going to talk about actual physical healing. Because that's how teachings like this started around 150 years ago, around the time of the war between the states, or what they call down here the War of Northern Aggression, whatever. Physical health was their primary emphasis. It wasn't until maybe 60 years later that focusing on prosperity and manifestation became a part of it, with people like Napoleon Hill and Ernest Holmes and Charles Murdo Fillmore, who started the Unity Movement, all of that. And even later than that, for the focus on relationships and work with people like Dale Carnegie and Norman Vincent Peale and like that. So this whole idea about mental and physical healing, mental and spiritual physical healing, is very interesting, because most of us have no trouble at all understanding how spirituality can heal the problems in or the conflict in a relationship, or how it can improve our mind in terms of our work or our career or whatever it is. We can even see how mental and spiritual healing can affect our thoughts about prosperity. But when it comes to something as serious as healing our body of some physical affliction, we often have trouble believing in spiritual solutions, because our body is something that we can see and feel. It's something solid, all right? It's physical. And when something in our body isn't working right, it hurts. And when we hurt, we want somebody to do something about it right now. Am I right? Okay, so it's a little more difficult to take this concept and extend it to that. Now, fortunately, the medical technology we have and the medications that we have developed today are incredibly advanced and can do some amazing things. But if you think about it, modern science, modern medicine, as we call it, is really a relatively recent development. It's only gotten to the point, started it to the point where we are now, about 80 years ago around World War II. Because up until then, most of the physical healing that went on in hospitals and in doctors' offices was fairly primitive compared to what we have today. I mean, the truth is, from the beginning, there was always a little bit of spiritual mystique about diseases and how they got caused and how they got cured. That's why drugs like penicillin, when they first came out, and I remember I was a child of the 50s, so I was there when they first started inoculating us at school, they were called miracle drugs. Everybody remember that? Penicillin and all of these were miracle drugs, because when we found these so-called magic bullets in the medical community, the power that they gave us to heal what used to be fatal diseases seemed like a miracle. That's why we called them that. With all of these new medicines that we had, death from diseases like the flu and polio and tuberculosis and pneumonia and all these other so-called common diseases that had been killing people for years all but disappeared, at least from the more developed countries of the world. And infections that routinely killed people during surgery, for example, or during childbirth, a lot of women died from infections during childbirth, they were almost eliminated. Even the diseases that struck the sinners, okay? Diseases like stuff spread by sex and drugs and alcohol and wild living and all that other stuff were found to be just as curable as other diseases, which really was very upsetting to the people who believed that these diseases were intentionally given to us by God so that we could identify the righteous and punish the wicked. Now, some people today even believe that about AIDS and HIV, that it is a punishment from God, which is why it is so unfortunate that we do not yet have a cure for stupidity. Anyway. Okay. Now, through the centuries, in every culture and every religion, there have been people who have acted as healers. there were always people in every tribe or every group, every family, whatever, who knew what plants to use and what herbs and what potions to mix up. They could also add, they also added things to it like rituals and drum beating and different ceremonies and prayers. And all of these things were very closely guarded secrets that were handed down from generation to generation. And these healers had many different names in different cultures. They were called shaman or witches sometimes, or priests sometimes. But they were all seen as the intermediaries between the gods or God and human beings, as someone who could get positive results when illness or injury showed up. So they were respected, but they were also very often feared because they knew things that nobody else knew. They held the power of life and death over everyone, from the highest king to the lowest peasant. But where there is power, there is frequently abuse. We all know that. Even though some of these healers were very, very effective, because what they were actually doing, as we look at it in hindsight, was using actual medical principles and spiritual principles combined, there were still enough other people who were what we call snake oil salesmen, who were going around and they were using fraud and fear and deception to take advantage of the people's superstition about illness and healing in order to make themselves wealthy or powerful. There were a lot of those people. That's why the concept of mental and spiritual healing fell by the wayside so quickly when medical science started getting some really positive results. And even though that's perfectly understandable, all right, that science trumps fraud, so to speak, we seem to have thrown the baby out with the bathwater. That's what I'm going to be talking about today. You see, today most people, most educated people at least, have chosen to believe that all physical healing should only be based on facts consistent with conventional scientific medical research. That's what we've been taught. If you've got a headache, take an aspirin. If you've got this, take that. Go see this kind of a doctor. All that kind of a stuff. We've all been told that all healing should only be based on certain well-defined laws that have been proven by the best medical minds in the world. And I do have to say, in many ways, that's not a bad thing. We have doctors and nurses and nutritionists here in this room right now, and you're all a part of that healing process, okay? There's a lot of modern medicine and modern knowledge that has made life a lot more comfortable for millions of people. But the unfortunate truth is that very narrow, unfocused attitude only on what we can see has caused us to limit unnecessarily something that could add immeasurably to the field of human health and healing. I mean, while it's true that over the last 30 years or so, some parts of the medical community have opened themselves up to the overwhelming amount of evidence supporting the effectiveness of mental and spiritual healing, like Dr. Herbert Benson opening the Harvard Mind-Body Clinic and a number of different other people and other practices, the prevailing attitude is still very skeptical. Very skeptical. Now, one of the reasons that modern medicine has been so closed to the effect of the mind on healing is that it has traditionally focused on the averages. It focuses on the majority of results, on those things that appear to be normal and explainable that happen to a lot of people. So the prevailing medical research defines accurate results as the ones that affect the most people the same way. So if something makes 90% of the people sick, they assume it's going to make all of the people sick. Or if a given treatment works for 95% of the people, that's the treatment of choice for 100% of the people. Only recently have certain doctors in certain places started paying attention to the exceptions. To the exceptions. And there have always been exceptions. Always, always, always. There have always been people who did not get sick while everybody around them was dying. Even in the worst plagues in Europe back in the 14 and 1500s. There have always been people who were somehow cured of serious diseases like cancer without radiation and without chemotherapy. There have even been people who were told that they would never walk again who ended up winning a gold medal in the Olympics. All of those things that exist. And the interesting thing is the doctors couldn't explain why and how these things happened. Let's take an example. Back in the 1980s, many of you, I'm sure, here recall, HIV was considered to be 100% fatal because supposedly everyone who got it died from it. At least that's what the traditional research told us. But as we know now, that wasn't entirely true. The fact was, there were some people who were living for years with HIV and nobody knew it, including them. And not everyone who had the virus was dying. Some of them weren't even getting sick, a number of them. I know a couple faces here in this room who have had the HIV virus for 30 years or more, and they're fine. They're fine, okay? But the medical community considered these individuals to be aberrations. Isn't that interesting? Aberrations, okay? And so instead of focusing on the people who were surviving and not getting sick, they focused most of their energy on the people who were suffering and dying, which from a compassion standpoint is wonderful and perfectly understandable. We need to help each other, and medicine does have to have that role to take care of people who are suffering. Unfortunately, that's not the best way to find a cure. That's not the best way to find a cure. Sometimes people who don't fit the standard mold have something we need to learn. But that's the way we in the West have become used to dealing with disease, okay? How do we deal with disease in this country? Find the cause and kill it, right? It's sort of like the government, okay? Same thing, all right? Now, it's the same with cancer. If someone no longer has a tumor that the doctor said was incurable, if it just goes away, they have a name for it. You know what it is? Spontaneous remission. Very scientific name, okay? Which is their way of saying, we don't know where it went or how it went, but it's probably going to come back. Okay? That's the translation of it, okay? And this was especially true if someone tried a treatment that was considered scientifically unsound and was still healed, sort of like the story I told a couple, 3 weeks ago about Norman Cousins. There were many doctors, not as many now as there were, who couldn't seem to accept that a treatment they couldn't explain just might have something to offer, especially if their scientifically proven method wasn't working all the time either. That's where it got a little shaky. Now, I want you to understand, because I've gotten hate mail before from doctors who said, why are you telling people this? But, you know, I can live with that. I'm not trying to blame the medical community. I'm not trying to blame doctors or nurses. These are wonderful people. Every doctor, nurse, medical person I know, their intentions are good, they're highly trained, and they are dedicated to healing their patients. But they're still looking at all these unexplained healings through the limited filter of their conventional training. And as Abraham Maslow, the great psychologist, once said, if the only tool you have is a hammer, then every problem starts to look like a nail. Okay, we've all heard that. You see, mental and spiritual healing is nothing new. It's been around as long as people have been getting sick or injured, and they've been able to connect with the healing power that flows through all of us, this healing power of life that we know is there. And there have been a number of different ideas about what it is and what it isn't. So let me touch on that for a minute. First of all, what it isn't, okay? Spiritual and mental and spiritual healing is not magic. It has nothing to do with miracles, and it has nothing to do with some unseen God that we beg to fix our broken and healing bodies, and this God decides who gets healed and who doesn't. Whenever I have a friend who is in one of the more traditional religious teachings ask about, can they get God to heal it? Why does God have to heal us? I say, why did God make you sick in the first place? Which is a very difficult answer. You start to get very, very confused when you use that basis. So spiritual mind healing is based on scientific and spiritual principles, and the two are not exclusive, with lots of anecdotal evidence behind it. And I can tell you, I have seen it work. And some of you have too. How many people would say you had seen a healing that has a spiritual component? Quite a few of you. So let's get a little bit deeper here. Let's get into the real understanding of this. To understand the principle behind mental and spiritual healing, we have to understand the principle of intelligence. And when I say intelligence, I'm not talking about book learning. I'm not talking about training. I'm not talking about IQ kind of intelligence. I'm talking about the intelligence that causes the stars and the planets to move perfectly in their orbits. I'm talking about the intelligence that is the thing that makes grass and trees grow, even though we don't know how. I'm talking about the intelligence that actually makes the world work. This is the intelligence behind all of life and all of matter and all of energy. This intelligence is all the laws of physics and chemistry and medicine and astronomy, and it's also some laws that we haven't discovered yet. That opens a very wide space. Every great teacher throughout history has talked about this intelligence, from the Buddha to Jesus to Galileo to Einstein and on and on and on. And they've all told us the same thing. They have all told us that this power, this invisible power that is a part of what we and all the world are, okay, is the sole power behind all creation, and that it is a part of us. Every single one of us told it. They called it by many different names, as I say in the opening, whatever. They called it God. Jesus called it the Father in me. That was the intelligence. They call it Chi in Eastern religions. They call it the life force. Whatever you want to call it, we know that it exists. And we know that it exists as a part of our body. So, if this is true, if this intelligence, this invisible intelligence is everywhere and everything, how do we use this to make use of our natural ability to heal? All right? We need to understand this intelligence as it pertains to the creation, the maintenance, and the healing of our physical bodies, because we are, get this if you get nothing else if you leave today, before you leave today, we are amazing creatures. We really, really are. Not just us, but all living, moving creatures on the planet. Our physical makeup and our bodily functions and our chemistry are so complex that even the most advanced science cannot duplicate a single bit of it. But there's more than that to consider. Think of our body physically. Let's just look at it sort of objectively from the back. Our skin keeps the bad stuff out. But it bends and moves real easily as we need to. It cools us down when we need to. It keeps us warm as much as it can. All right, our muscles move as quickly as we can think, whether it's strong movements or little subtle movements. All it takes is a thought to make these muscles work. Our lungs process oxygen effortlessly. Our heart beats faster or slower, whatever we need, without our having to think about it. Our digestive system turns whatever we eat, whether it's a Big Mac, fries, and a chocolate shake, any takers, okay, or fruits and vegetables for my nutritionist friends, okay, it turns these things into all the different cells in the body. It doesn't care what you give it. That's what it does, though the quality of the cells may be a little different, depending. And then there's our brain, okay, the most complex computer known, light years ahead of anything science has come up with. So consider this as you think about healing, if you or someone you know is dealing with something, all right? Without us having to do anything special, every single cell in our body gets replaced at the right time with an exact replica in exactly the right place and knows exactly what it's supposed to do. True? Given? You know how I know that? Because we're all here. Okay? We're all here. In his first book on healing, Deepak Chopra, it was called Quantum Healing. If you haven't read it, it's a classic. Go back and read it, whatever. He said, our liver, every cell in our liver is replaced every 6 weeks. Every cell in our stomach lining is totally replaced every 10 days. Every cell in our skeleton is replaced every 2 years. He says over a 7-year period, every single cell in your body is replaced. Appropriately replaced, I might add, okay? So if you're a vegetarian, your body will replace the cells with that. If you eat meat, your body will replace the cells with that, okay? Which would seem to indicate, if you think about it, that we are all physically entirely different people than we were 7 years ago. Makes sense, right? If every cell is replaced, then none of it was here 8 years ago, okay? But there's still a part of us that's still the same person we've always been. We don't forget who we were every 7 years, okay? And that's the part of me that still relates, and the part of you that relates to the you that learned to ride a bicycle when you were 7 or 8 years old, or the part of you that graduated from college 25, 30, 40 years ago. And it's not a physical part. It's continuity without the cell's continuity, okay? And if it's not physical, it has to be metaphysical, which is the Greek term for over and above the physical, which means something greater than our physical body. So for the purpose of today's discussion, that simply means that there is some form of intelligence, some higher level of awareness that exists as us, completely independent of our physical body. Everybody following this? It's completely independent of our physical body, but it is intimately connected. Intimately connected as part of it. And it functions through our body in many ways, some of which we understand and some of which we don't. We've even learned that there are certain physical responses that our body makes when our thoughts change, whether it's muscular impulses or hormones and enzymes changing, things that are triggered by nothing but our thoughts. So when we react to something around us, as Doug was talking about in the feud thing, when we react to situations around us in certain emotional ways or certain mental ways, our entire body changes. When we get angry, our blood turns more acidic, okay? Our digestive system is disturbed because the blood all goes to our joints. Our muscles get tense. Our heart beats faster. We start to sweat. All of these things happen, all because our mind senses fear, all right? Now, it may not have to be real. We may look at a rope and think it's a snake, and the fear comes up, but there's nothing to be afraid of. So the fear is in the mind, and the mind causes the body to react in certain ways. Now, it's the same thing when we're angry. There are many people who are constantly angry or irritated or annoyed. That's all the same thing, okay? Or under negative stress for long periods of time, who experience a significantly higher incidence of things like ulcers and high blood pressure and heart problems. Even certain cancers can be related to stress. My teacher's teacher, Dr. Raymond Charles Barker, used to say that if you show me someone with a long-seated, deep hatred of their parents, I will show you a nice, ripe stomach cancer ready to happen. Very, very interesting statement. I'll give you a personal story. The other day, I had to ride around and do some errands, and I live in the La Vista Cheshire Bridge area, which is really fun right now, you know, and it was taking me forever. And I went into CVS or Kroger, wherever it was, and I had been doing all this stuff, and I saw one of those blood pressure machines. So I sat down on the blood pressure machine, okay? I'm cool, you know, everything's fine. So I sit down there, and my blood pressure is like 145 over 100. Why? I'm running around in traffic looking at all these people. Everybody's angry at everybody else, and I'm getting caught up in it. But it's all mental. It's all my mind causing my body to react, okay? But these problems don't happen to everyone. They don't, all right? People who are not as susceptible to fear or who aren't as quick to anger avoid most of these adverse effects. In other words, people who use their mind to consciously control their response to the situations around them tend to be in more control of their greater health. And the statistics have been run. People with that kind of personality type don't get sick as often. And when they do get sick, they heal faster. All right? So there's no question that our mind affects our health, which means there's no question that our thoughts affect the same health. So the real question is, who's choosing our thoughts? All right. Who decides what we believe? Who decides how we respond to things or how we control who gets our attention? Who decides what makes us angry? And who decides what makes us calm down? Now, the answer should be obvious. I think if I asked you guys, you would all say the same thing. But for a lot of people, it isn't. Okay? A lot of people have given up choosing how to think about their health. They've decided that if they ever have a problem, and they wait until they get a problem before they check on it, that if they ever have a problem, they'll just go to a doctor and the doctor will tell them what to do because they're the doctor. And if they don't have the answer, then who does? But it's even more complicated than that. When we think about health, all right, we accept what the media tells us. We accept what our friends and our neighbors and our coworkers tell us, even if what they tell us doesn't make sense. Even if we're more aware of a positive message, okay, of positive information that conflicts with what we're told, we have become so immersed in a system based on the law of averages that we just assume that we're average. We just assume we're average, and our health ends up reflecting what we believe. That's why we catch the flu during flu season, okay? If I came and ran this gets a little gross, but bear with me. If I ran a swab, a Q-tip or something, around the inside of your nose, at any time of the year, you know what, and put it under a microscope, you would see flu germs, you would see cold germs, you'd see all these things, but you're not sick. But start putting on these advertisements on television, have you had your flu shot, is it flu season, da-da-da-da, and people start dropping like flies. You've seen it at work. You've seen it here, okay? And if we get diagnosed with something really serious, we throw ourselves completely on the mercy of the modern medical establishment. And as a result, instead of seeing these incredible medical professionals, these very well-meaning people, as one part of a greater process of healing, not as a whole process, as an important part of the healing that includes them, we put all our faith in them, and then we scare ourselves to death by imagining the worst. We scare ourselves to death. When we start worrying that the doctors aren't going to be able to fix it or to heal us, our recovery becomes kind of a crapshoot because we give up the most powerful source of healing that we have. We turn away from this healing consciousness that is part of the intelligence that created and sustains our body every single day. Now, this healing intelligence doesn't go anywhere. It can't because it's a part of what we are. We just forget to use it. We just forget to use it. Okay, we start to feel powerless, and that makes us afraid, and then all the stuff that fear brings up starts to aggravate the situation. In fact, Kennedy Schultz, my teacher, once, I think he wrote it in his book, You Are the Power. It says, get this, the fear of death is part of the pathology of a terminal disease. Think about what that means. The fear of death is part of the pathology of a terminal disease. In other words, our belief that it is our fear that something is terminal actually makes it terminal. It's a very, very interesting concept because the one thing that can break that cycle is what? Our beliefs. Our mind, our beliefs, our belief in something greater. Okay? There's a much better way to participate in our own healing, whether we're talking about a mild cold or a little bug or a tumor as big as a watermelon. And it involves the use of our thoughts and our emotions and a firm belief that there is a power in the world that works in, as, and through us. It's a technique we can use. We give it different names, affirmative prayers, spiritual mind treatment, whatever. But you see, because in our mind is where our physical problems begin, that's where our healing has to begin. That's what Dr. Holmes said. He said, the thing that makes you sick is the thing that makes you well. It's the same thing. So if your health becomes an issue in your life, all right, and we're not just talking about illness and injury. I'm talking about things like weight or addiction or any of those things that people occasionally run into. And it doesn't need to be an issue, but if it does, the first thing you do at your first opportunity is to clear your mind of whatever is in it, because what's in it probably isn't doing you any good, and focus your complete attention on this new course of action that I'm going to tell you, all right? First of all, accept completely that there is one power of life in the universe. It is a constructive power for good, and it is everywhere present. So that means it's in you, it's in every cell of your being, and that its essence is perfect health and wholeness. Get clear about that first. Next, recognize that your physical body is a reflection of a spiritual being. All right? An invisible power of pure energy that just happens to be one with this same power that creates everything else in the world. And your body, your physical body, forms around this energy. Sort of like those, remember that experiment in elementary school where you took a piece of paper and you poured some iron filings on it and they were all over the place? And you put a magnet underneath? Anybody else do that when you were growing up? And it took a shape? Our body is the magnet. Our body is the iron filings. The energy is the magnet. All right? That's what we have to focus on, okay? Now, after that, deny completely that you are subject to anybody else's belief about the disease or whatever it is that's affecting you. Deny that the power of your health exists anywhere outside of you or anywhere outside of your control. Reaffirm that you are a healthy person, that your body knows exactly what it needs to do to make you healthy and whole again. All right? My body knows what it needs to do because it does it every single day. Then interject a little bit of gratitude for the strength and the balance and the perfect function of your body and the spiritual core that sits at the center of it. Believe that you are not getting sicker. Believe that you're getting healthier by the minute. no matter what you see around you, believe you're getting healthier by the minute. And then once you're clear about all that, let it go and go about your business and stay at peace in your heart and in your mind. Okay? If you do that, it'll allow your body to do the same. And when I say stay at peace, I mean don't focus on what might happen or why it had to happen to you. All right? Don't spend all your energy fighting a disease. Just release it. Release the fear. Release the anger. They don't help. They don't help. Instead, focus your attention on your natural state of health, because we always get better results not when we try to force ourselves to heal, but when we allow ourselves to heal. We don't want to force it. Allow it. Allow the healing to take place. And finally, by all means, listen carefully, okay, before you write the letter. Use everything available to you for your healing. Everything available to you for your healing, all right, that fits with your conscious awareness of your health and wholeness. Talk to a doctor by all means if you feel the situation calls for it. Listen to the opinion of an expert if you need to, whether it's a doctor, a nutritionist, a nurse practitioner, whatever it happens to be. Take whatever medication you believe supports your healing, because it's your belief in the medication that makes it powerful. All right? Consider surgery if that appears to be the best course of action. But while you are immersed in the world of modern medicine, and it's very easy to do, don't lose track of where your center is. Of where your center is. Don't lose track of where the healing power is. Your conscious, mental, and spiritual work will help you to make the intelligent decisions that you need to make your symptoms less severe, and it will heal you faster than your doctor's going to believe. I've talked to doctors who have been pleasantly surprised more than once. You see, our mind is the creator of our body. It tells everything in the body what to do, how to do it, whether we're aware of it or not. And when we find that we need to be healed from some temporary situation, no matter how serious our doctors or our friends or anybody says it is, we need to remember that the first step is always to accept a healing in our heart and our mind. That's the only way we're going to be at peace and allow that peace to take place in our body. And when we do that, we will see results. I promise you that. And that's when we see the true power of mental and spiritual healing. So this is the truth in your life, and this is the truth in mine. And so it is. And so it is. All right. Thank you. All right. Okay, let's take a moment. I know all of us have a different relationship with our own body, our history of ailments, our histories of healing, our friends, our family, our loved ones who have been through so many things, and all the mixed emotions we have. But right now, in this moment, let's know something better. Let's each of us know that the one power that creates the universe and is the universe is a constructive power. It is always building, always expanding, and knows how to heal itself. That is a part of the wisdom of spirit. So I know that I am of that power, of that essence. I am in God, and God is in me. I am in the healing energy of life, and the healing energy of life is in me. Not just in me in my stomach like I swallowed a marble. It's in me in every cell of my being, from my little toe to my ears, to the top of my head. Every single cell of my body is an intelligent element that is a part of the whole. So I know that health and healing is always possible. I know that when I make my transition from this plane of existence to the next, the thing we call death, I do not need to be sick to die. And I do not need to die of sickness. All of this is the truth. And as I know this, I am not distracted by the world's beliefs. I am not distracted by the world's idea that healing can only come from outside of me. I realize that the healing power of life is everywhere, so it may be partially outside of me, but it is completely inside of me. So by knowing health, I attract health. By knowing strength, I attract strength. By knowing agility, I attract agility. By knowing peace and calm, I attract peace and calm. All of this, all the things that I call physical, are spiritual first. And my connection to spirituality comes from my mind. It comes from my consciousness. So I embrace a consciousness of health and wholeness. I embrace a consciousness that allows me not only to be the healing power in my own life, but to be a healing energy for everyone I'm around. I do not just heal when I feel a problem. I am healing every single moment. My body is renewing itself, replacing itself, and I know through my awareness that it is replacing itself exactly as I need. So as I age, which is a natural part of my experience, as my body changes, I bless it, I embrace it, and I am grateful for the strength I have to walk, to eat, to sleep, to hold the people I love, to make love, to do all these things that are a part of my physical experience, but embracing the spirituality that lies beneath it. This is my truth. I accept it completely. I embrace it. I embody it. And I release it into consciousness, letting it be the truth for me from this moment on. Join me in saying, and so it is.